From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Harry Houdini is known for grand illusions and death-defying escapes, but what lies behind the curtain of Houdini as a performer? Why were some uses of trickery reviled by the Master of Magic? A new exhibit at the Jewish Museum of Maryland called Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini, reveals answers to those questions and more. We hear from Marvin Pinkert, the museum's executive director, and David London, magician, performer, and curator of the exhibit.
In his mind, magic was deception for fun and enjoyment, whereas the spiritualist mediums were presenting deception in order to prey on people who were grieving and to take their money in exchange for trying to contact their loved ones.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Escape artist and grand illusionist Harry Houdini may be the most famous name in the world of magic. In cities around the world, crowds of tens of thousands would gather to watch in awe of his latest death-defying act. But what lies behind the curtain of Houdini as a performer? Why were some uses of trickery reviled by the Master of Magic? A new exhibit at the Jewish Museum called Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini, reveals some answers to those questions and more. Here to tell us about the exhibit is Marvin Pinkert, executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thank you, Sheila.
And also with us is magician, performer, and the exhibit curator, David London. Welcome, David.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Marvin, it's kind of magical how you even came to host this exhibit at the Jewish Museum. Tell
yes.
us how that happened.
Well, last summer, things were going rather poorly. We had lost an exhibit project that we were supposed to get for this summer. And so I decided to cheer myself up by going to Artscape. And typically, the weather was beastly hot, and I was willing to do anything to get out of the heat. So I entered the only air-conditioned building in sight, which was a theater. And there I sat down in the chair, prepared to watch any program that they put on. And what was there was David London and his magic show. And that's changed everything.
So what did you see at the magic show that prompted this exhibit?
Well, I was sitting there recovering from my heat stroke and saying to myself, you know, somewhere back in college, I remember a course where they talked about Houdini as the son of a rabbi. This show is so great. I wonder if David would be willing to be a guest curator for a magic show that deals with Jews and magic. And so I wrote an email to David, and lo and behold, he said yes. In fact, David, I believe you said something about this being something you've been working on your whole life.
Yeah, by chance, I had my own bar mitzvah when I had to give a speech. My speech was about magic and Judaism at age 13, and I've always been a fan of Houdini since I was a young kid. And so the research that I've been involved in throughout my entire life sort of led up to this email that I received from Marvin, and it just sort of seemed like all of the stars had come together at that moment to bring us together.
So you've both dropped a few clues about Harry Houdini. Tell us more about him. He was Jewish.
He was
from where?
He was born in Budapest, Hungary. He came to America at 4 years old with the rest of his family, and his father had gotten a job as the first rabbi of a synagogue in Appleton, Wisconsin. So they headed into the Midwest, and they jumped around the Midwest. He worked as the rabbi for 4 years, then lost his job once a new synagogue was built in Appleton. They moved to Milwaukee, where they saw endless struggle and difficulty. Houdini ran away from home and then landed in New York City, where he reunited with his father. They struggled to make enough money to support the rest of the family and bring them to New York. And then at around age 16, young Eric Weiss, which was the birth name of Harry Houdini, decided to create this character named Harry Houdini and essentially transformed himself into what is arguably the greatest magician of all time.
What else should we know about Harry Houdini?
Well, you know, the fact that Houdini was not just a success in the 20th century, but a struggling performer in the 19th century is one that we point out in the exhibit. About half the exhibit is devoted not to Harry Houdini, the world-famous magician, escape artist, etc., but to Harry Houdini, the circus performer, the dime museum performer, going out to vaudeville and performing there. At any place that he could find that would accept his act, Harry Houdini tried it. And so it is a story of an immigrant who makes it in America, but not with ease, with a great deal of difficulty.
So, David, was there a turning point for Houdini as a performer that catapulted him into fame?
Yeah. So, I mean, interestingly, Houdini lived a 52-year life, and 26 years of those were spent in the 19th century, and 26 years of those were spent in the 20th century. And those first 26 years, as Marvin mentions, were filled with endless difficulty and struggle, sort of battled with determination and a great vision of what he wanted to become. And the next 26 years are the years that we mostly know, which were filled with fortune and fame. And that transition took place right at the end of the 19th century, when he was really on the verge of quitting show business forever. He was fed up with all of the time and energy and little recognition he had received, and he was fulfilling some outstanding contracts, and he was seen by Martin Beck, who was the manager of the Orpheum Vaudeville Circuit. And Beck saw in Houdini what he believed could be one of the greatest acts Vaudeville had ever seen. So Houdini receives a telegram from Martin Beck a few weeks later, which he notes changed his life forever. He gets a few contracts to perform in the Orpheum Vaudeville Circuit, and then soon signs a contract to tour all of the Orpheum theaters. And within a year, Houdini is a celebrity around America, and soon he is off to Europe.
It's not quite clear to me what it was that Marvin Beck saw that nobody else had seen in Houdini.
Sure. So there were many magicians performing in vaudeville, but Houdini took the notion of the escape act and brought it to the forefront. He was able to be tied into anything that anybody could bind him in and get out of it. And so the act that Martin Beck saw was a combination of both magic as well as escapes. But Beck saw that in the escape act, there was a real human drama playing out. And he believed that audiences around the country would be able to connect to that drama of witnessing the escape and experiencing the metaphor of that escape. And he thought that this was the act that was going to take America by storm.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Marvin Pinkert, Executive Director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland, and David London, Curator of the new exhibit, Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini. It opens on Sunday. So, Marvin, what do we see in the exhibit?
Well, you see some wonderful artifacts, one of Houdini's straitjackets, some of the locks and picks he used when he escaped. You see things that are from his personal life, his travel diary in Maryland, where he says every other night, he says no dinner. This was when he was with the circus and couldn't afford to eat. You also see his Bible that belonged to Houdini, his Hebrew Bible. So it's fantastic what David was able to find as he went around the country. And in addition to the artifacts, we've actually included some interactive magic in the exhibit. We've got the world's smallest version of the world's largest trick, the vanishing elephant trick, so that you or your child can put on some costume and actually perform the vanishing elephant trick. We have spirit photography. We have the card trick that you can learn and do.
So a lot of it is interactive. David, you're creating a living history character of Houdini.
Yeah, so correct. In conjunction with the exhibition, I've been developing a performance and educational demonstration where I become Harry Houdini and tell the story of his amazing life and career. And that will be presented mostly at schools and camps around the region over the next 8 months while the exhibition is on display.
So the grand opening of the exhibit is Sunday.
Sunday, June 24th.
Tell us about the street fair that's part of it.
Well, we decided that this would be every year Jonestown, which is the neighborhood we're in, has an annual festival. And we decided to make our opening the open to all of our neighbors and to create a Magic of Jonestown festival. And so we've got 15 different institutions from the Lewis Museum and the Star-Spangled Banner Flag House, to the new Ronald McDonald House, all lining Lloyd Street, which will be closed down for the afternoon. And then in the center, we have a crane. And that crane will lift Di Andrews, an escape artist, to perform a version of the trick that Houdini did in 1916, hanging off a building in a straitjacket upside down and escaping. And that's what Di will do on Lloyd Street in front of the Lloyd Street Synagogue.
This was a performance that Houdini did on Charles Street in Baltimore.
Yes, to the acclaim of about 50,000 people who came to Charles Street. It's, the photos of the event, which are in the exhibit, are unbelievable. Packed person to person, people hanging out of windows. I think they were in more danger than Houdini was. But everyone came to see this event. And we hope some people will come on Sunday to see our opening.
Well, you certainly make it sound exciting. We need to take a quick break here on the record. We're talking about the new exhibit, Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini, with the executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland, Marvin Pinkert, and magician and curator of the exhibit, David London. After the break, we'll ask about Houdini's reputation as a seance buster. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the exhibit that opens Sunday at the Jewish Museum of Maryland, Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini. Here to share some of the details is Executive Director Marvin Pinkert and magician and curator David London. Here's an audio clip of Houdini introducing one of his famous acts, the water torture cell. You have the whole recording in the exhibit. Let's take a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, I take great pleasure in introducing my latest invention, the water torture cell. I am willing to forfeit the sum of $1,000 to anyone who can prove that it is possible to obtain air inside of the torture cell after it has been filled with water.
Houdini regularly offered rewards if someone could debunk his illusions. Was this his way of marketing?
Absolutely, yeah. He was constantly offering rewards of all types for people that could prove that he was using trickery in his escapes. I found one report where he was offering $1,000 to anyone who could prove that his ticket sales in Maryland were not the greatest ticket sales the Maryland Theater had ever acquired for a single performance. And all of this was to entice people who would read the newspaper article to come and try to claim the reward, and in turn they would have to buy a ticket. So all of this was leading to selling more tickets.
One of my favorite discoveries that David came up with was that the challenges that Houdini is famous for were the police forces or the private companies would challenge him to escape from something, that they were often instigated by Houdini. He would write to, for example, a beer company in Baltimore and say, lock me in a barrel and I'll escape. And so they finally agree to it and write the letter starting with, in response to your numerous inquiries, we will lock you in a barrel.
Did he ever have to pay off on any of these challenges? Did anybody ever prove anything?
No, these were designed to not ever be proven. I mean, how could you prove when Houdini was on stage locked upside down in a water torture cell that he wasn't receiving air? These were all ploys to get people to buy tickets to his show. And to Marvin's comment about challenging local companies, I do believe that he chose the companies that he begged to challenge him by who had the largest number of employees, because all of those employees would then buy a ticket to show up to see him. It was all about selling tickets for Houdini.
Did the era in which he was performing early in the 20th century have anything to do with his popularity?
Oh, I think that was key. Among the other things that we feature in the exhibit are some of his silent film footage. His reputation was carried not just by a conventional print press, but by film as well. And so he had the opportunity that previous performers would not have had to quickly get a international reputation.
And I personally believe that Houdini could have only become Houdini and achieved the level of fame and success he did because of the time that he existed in. In Houdini's lifetime, skyscrapers were invented, the telephone was invented, a radio was invented, film was invented, and he was always at the forefront of these technologies and figuring out how to use these emerging technologies in order to push his career forward. So I think the timing of Houdini's rise to fame was absolutely essential in him being able to become the international superstar that he became.
Houdini spent the last few years of his life vehemently criticizing seance mediums and other performers of spirit communication that he called out as trickery. How and why did he do that?
Well, this goes back at least to 1920 when he's in conversation with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and
the creator of Sherlock Holmes.
And Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is a big believer in spiritualism, the idea that you can communicate with the dead. And his wife is a medium. And Houdini totally angers Holmes because his wife gives a private seance to try to contact Houdini's mother. And Houdini says, "This isn't my mother." Among other things, she speaks fluent English, which my mother did not. And so... after that, he starts to make a campaign to expose mediums and gains a sufficient reputation that when the Scientific American organizes a competition in 1922 to find a real medium, someone who's genuine, Houdini is appointed as one of the five panelists to judge that contest. And I'll let David take up the story from there.
Sure. So I think that... a little background on spiritualism would probably be good in that spiritualism had two major heydays, and one was after the Civil War and one was after World War I. And this was a time when lots of people had lost their loved ones and they were looking for ways to hold on. And so during the second round in the 1920s, when Houdini became an ardent debunker of spiritualism, it was really a phenomenon throughout the entire country and throughout the entire world. And he was so well versed in deceptive practices that he was able to see through the fraudulent techniques that mediums were using, and he was really against using deception in order to con people. In his mind, magic was deception for fun and enjoyment, whereas the spiritualist mediums were presenting deception in order to prey on people who were grieving and to take their money in exchange for trying to contact their loved ones.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with David London, magician and curator of the new exhibit Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini at the Jewish Museum of Maryland, and with Marvin Pinkert, executive director of the museum. The grand opening, including a street fair with music, food, and a recreation of Houdini's suspended straitjacket escape, is this Sunday. So at one point, Houdini actually testified before Congress, right?
Yes.
Against fortune telling.
He did. There was a bill before Congress to ban fortune telling in Washington, D.C., and Houdini testified before Congress and put on quite a show in order to gain attention from the media. And he, once again, was against all forms of deception being used in order to con people and take advantage of them.
Tell me more about why the trickery used in seances would be any different than what Houdini used to entertain audiences.
It's not that the trickery was different. It's that its purpose was different. He believed that it was okay to pay to be fooled, but not okay to fool people into paying. And that's the distinction that he made.
He lived only to age 52. What happened to him?
One of Houdini's claims, because he was an incredibly well-fit man throughout his entire life, and one of his claims was that he was able to take a punch from even the strongest boxer, which he was able to do by tightening his abdominal muscles, which took a little bit of preparation. So he was performing in Canada, and a college student came backstage before a performance while Houdini was apparently lying down on a couch and said, "I hear you can take any punch." And Houdini sort of casually said, "Yeah, I can do that." And then this college student began punching Houdini in the stomach before he was able to prepare. What happened during that is Houdini's appendix exploded. And basically over the next several weeks, he was poisoned to death from inside of his own body. And part of his dying was his stubbornness and unwillingness to stop his tour and go to the doctor. And finally, once he made it to Detroit and was in so much pain that they forced him to go, it was too late and Houdini left this world forever.
He had said if anybody could communicate from the dead, it would be he.
Right. He left to his wife, Bess, with a supposedly coded message that he would deliver if he was able to communicate across the veil. And Bess held a seance the year after he died. He died on Halloween. And no contact was made at that time or over the next 10 years. But the seance is later done by Houdini's brother and then his brother's son continue to this day every Halloween. And this Halloween, the seance will be held at the Jewish Museum of Maryland.
We'll keep in touch with you about that.
Yes. We'll let you know if we hear from Harry.
Both of you, after being so immersed in the world of illusion for this exhibit, what do you think makes people want to be tricked? What is the allure?
Sure. I mean, I think that the experience of magic is beyond just the experience of being tricked, right? The experience of magic sort of allows you to transcend reality and step outside of yourself. When you realize that you are being tricked, though, I think the enjoyment of that is the reminder that maybe things that we take for granted aren't exactly what they seemed. And so a trick sort of allows you to realize that everything that we take as reality could itself be one large trick.
I think it's also that people are on the hunt for how to explain the unexplainable. And when I came out of David's magic show, I remember listening to everyone around me who was trying to explain all of David's tricks. And it occurred to me that part of this is, are you as smart as the magician? Are you able to figure out how he did it? And I think that that is part of what intrigues people about magic.
And you're giving us such a window into it in this new exhibit. Thank you so much. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Marvin Pinkert is executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. David London is a magician and curator of the exhibit we've been discussing titled Inescapable, The Life and Legacy of Harry Houdini. The exhibit opens at 10 a.m. this Sunday. The grand opening, including a street fair with music, food, and a recreation of Houdini's suspended straitjacket escape, starts at noon Sunday at 15 Lloyd Street in Baltimore. There are more special events coming up throughout the summer, including one at the end of July about Houdini's wife, Bess, and her intense role in her husband's success. The exhibit will be on view through January 21st, 2019. We have a link to lots of information at the On the Record page at WYPER.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for being with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.